Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. How's everybody doing today? I hope you're doing great. I think you're going to be doing greater after you hear today's show. He's been on the show before and with his first book, which is so totally excellent. I'm still getting great reviews from you on it, 3 Feet from Gold. His name is Greg Reed. He's a filmmaker, a motivational speaker. He's a best-selling author. He's an entrepreneur. He's CEO of several successful corporations. He's also a really fun guy. Today we're going to be talking about his latest book, Stickability, The Power of Perseverance. So good morning, Greg.
Hey there. So you just called me a mushroom. I like that.
Did I call you a mushroom?
Yeah, because you said I was a fun guy.
Okay, I get it. It's a little early in the day for me to be that keen. You know, my father was Italian, and he had a very strong Italian accent when he spoke, but one of the words that he rammed home to all of his daughters, instead of saying perseverance, he would say, you have to have perseverance. You gotta have perseverance. And when I saw the cover of your book, of course, I immediately thought about my dad.
Well, yeah, that's a great little play there. The new book's called Think and Grow Rich, Stickability. And the subtitle is The Power of Perseverance. You know, after we did 3 Feet from Gold, you know, it had a lot of success worldwide. And people said, you know, that's a great story about not quitting, but how do you not quit? And so I went on a mission to meet all these amazing people to find out, you know, their only stories of how they pushed through their most challenging moments.
Absolutely. You know, I was really, I was happy to see that you covered Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs in the book, because I had the privilege of interviewing Steve Wozniak, you know, a couple of years back. I hope it's still in my archives here on site. But when you think of what they did and how they started Apple, and knowing that Apple today actually has more cash reserves than the U.S. government, it's pretty amazing.
Well, yeah, and it's also, you know, the message behind the message. See, everyone always sees that big stuff, you know, yeah, all that's awesome. But when I sat him down, I said, how did you and Steve create the success you did? And he said, we embraced what we did not have. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, we embraced our lack. And I go, give me an example. He said, well, when microprocessor chips came out, they were expensive. He goes, Steve and I could chip in all of our money and buy one of these chips. He goes, I had to take a Hewlett-Packard machine that would go from point A to point B with 20 of these chips, because they could afford as many as they wanted. Mm-hmm. I'd pull away 5 and I'd get it to work. I'd pull away 5 and I'd still get it to work. Till finally I could go from point A to point B with my one chip. Not because we're trying to be slick or cool, we could only afford one. But by embracing that as an opportunity, we found the shortest, cleanest path and changed the way that personal computing is done for the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you know, a lot of people are, of course, I'm sure you know in your journeys around the world, that a lot of people are really in a lot of fear right now because of the economic state of the world. How do people get past that fear? I mean, I know a lot of people that say, if I could, I'd like to start this business, I'd like to start an online business, but they have so much fear and reservation. What would you say to somebody like that?
A double-edged sword. First of all, they can do it. So they could do it, and they can do it. They just aren't doing it. So, I mean, the realities are we are exactly where we choose to be. And fear is just a man-made myth that we make up for ourselves. There's no such really thing as fear. I mean, I've got a 2-year-old son right now. He has no idea what fear is. You know, to him, you know, everything's perfect and kumbaya, and he'll jump off anything, and he doesn't know what fear is. We are taught fear. And then later on, we adapt our own fears into it. Mm-hmm. So I just find it really amazing how, you know, sometimes we can let our own stinking thinking hold us back from what we want to do in life. Understand this, and this is a, you know, kind of a deep thing, but this is my personal belief system. I believe that a lot of people have died for our opportunities, for our chances that we have in this world. How many people are in a foxhole? You know, World War II, or in Korea, or Vietnam, or what have you. How many people gave their lives so that we could have this opportunity? And to sit back and go, gee, I don't want to start that online business because I'm afraid I'll fail. But those people just punch you in the face because they gave everything they could for us to have that opportunity. So the whole thing is, I think it's our obligation, duty, and responsibility to not only step up, to step to the front of the line and actually take all the best shots that you can. Mm-hmm. But again, that's just my core belief system.
Right. Well, you know, I have a friend who I've known for almost 20 years. And one of the things that he basically recently said it again, you know, I wish I could, I'm thinking about starting this coffee export business online. I've heard that now for about 16 years. So is it procrastination? Is he just bullshitting when he says it? Is it just a pipe dream? Or is it something that he cares about because it's obvious he's talked about it for 16 years?
Well, I don't know that individual, so I can't diagnose, but I can say this. Majority of the people, you know, they'd rather live in the fantasy of what's possible than the realities of the challenge at hand. So a lot of people don't take actions because then they have to face the realities. You know how many people quit one class short from their college degree? Because the reason is, the second they get that degree, they have to be an accountant. It's easier to talk about how you're going to be an accountant than to actually have to embrace that. So a lot of times people sit there and stop 3 feet from gold so that they don't have to actually step into the reality of their success or their failure. And Napoleon Hill talked about people's fear of failure or fear of success. And it sounds to me like this guy's embracing one of those two.
Right, right. When you talk about perseverance, is that different than being disciplined, or are they complementary?
I don't know. Rephrase that question.
Okay. Basically, what I'm asking you is, what's the meaning of the word perseverance? Is it different than being disciplined?
Yeah, perseverance is I think, to me, the definition is, after interviewing all these amazing people, it's getting scrappy. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It's getting scrappy. It's finding a way. None of these people, and again, people that are listening to this for the first time, I got to sit down and meet with, for 3 feet from gold, for example, everyone from the president of NASCAR to the guy building the elevator to space, the gentleman who invented string theory to Miss America and Mrs. Fields cookies. And in stickability, I interviewed everyone from the guy who invented the cellular phone to Steve Wozniak from Apple, from the founder of Make-A-Wish to all these people. Mm-hmm. And all these folks, they're scrappy. They found a way to find a solution. And what was really interesting is, majority of the people that had the greatest success did it when they had nothing else to go by. And that's one of my favorite parts of it. See, if you open a real estate company today, you've got a lot of examples to learn from in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of these people paved the way without having any blueprint to follow. So therefore, they could be as creative and scrappy as they wanted to because they didn't have anything to go by.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how great innovation seems to come.
Right. Well, I certainly like the word stickability. You know, when I was pre-announcing the show, I was like, who's got better stickability than me, still on the internet 14 years later?
Right. Well, you're actually embodying it by doing it. You know, first of all, there's a dream, then there's challenges, and then there's victory. Unfortunately, most people quit in the challenge. They don't give themselves the opportunity to have that victory. And so it's the few people that keep getting, you know, scrappy. They find a solution. They find a way. They're the ones at the end of telling stories about it down the line.
Well, I got to tell you, I really like the word stickability, that's for sure. What about discipline? You know, I actually had a conversation with one of the trainers in my gym yesterday. He came over to me very upset because the person he's working with refuses to change his diet. And he can't really make a difference with this guy in the gym if he keeps eating like there's no tomorrow. And he says, you know, I'm sure you've seen how much patience I have. He said, you know, not everybody has the discipline you have. How can I handle this? You know, and it's an interesting story because that was another word my father beat into us. Besides perseverance, it was discipline. It was integrity. You know, these were things we heard almost every day of our lives growing up. But when you look at so many people, they don't even have self-discipline. Is that something people can learn?
Well, absolutely, and there's a fine line. I mean, look, first of all, the second we try to fix people, and I did that in air parentheses there, Well, you're setting yourself up for frustration. Mm-hmm. To me, the challenge lies with the personal trainer, not the person going to the gym. Mm-hmm. The person going to the gym is taking at least steps forward towards creating a life that they want. And sometimes it just takes a, you know, some type of catalyst for them to get moving. So hypothetically, if I was an overweight guy and I needed to get in shape, but I was still eating my fries and my burgers, but I actually started going to the gym, well, that's the first step. Mm-hmm. So rather than getting frustrated, I would actually reward and point out the great things that someone's doing, and then hopefully the other part will come into play. Mm-hmm. But the showing, it's like going up to someone saying, don't you know that smoking's bad or whatever it is. People already know that. You don't have to tell them that. But until they're ready, there's not going to be a shift. And they're not going to get ready when someone's shoving it down their face.
Oh, I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah, I think it's a trainer's problem more than the...
Well, you know, the trainer happens to be a very soft-spoken, very caring older guy. And I said to him, look, everybody knows, at least professionals know, that getting in shape is 60% nutrition. I said, so you need to tell him if it's bothering you so much, you know, why throw your money away on a trainer if you're not willing to make the changes in your diet? Because people always want a miracle.
Because 40% of it he's dealing with, where a lot of people are dealing with none of it.
Well, that's true.
Again, I would congratulate that 40% mm-hmm. and encourage it. It seems like in today's world, you can meet somebody and they got 10 things going on. But all we do is focus about that one thing that's out of place.
Right.
And acknowledge all the other great things. So, you know, I guess I'm just more of an optimist when it comes down to those type of the things. But let me go back to answer your question. When it goes down to discipline, Napoleon Hill talked about self-discipline being one of the key elements for all personal achievement. And I agree. And it's one of those type of things that some people are innate. You know, it's just instinct. Some people have to be trained. But there's a lot of studies right now at Annapolis and some of the different military colleges where they're believing that they can train leadership, where I've always thought leadership is innate. You know, it's something that who you are already, you know, you're already made up of that person or you're not. However, on the same note, they believe that they can start training that. And I've been talking to some neuroscientists who are believing that same thing. So I guess only the time will tell, but according to modern science, that technically, yes, you can train discipline. So it'll be kind of interesting.
Right. Well, you know, when I read that, there was a passage in the book, Stickability, that leadership can be learned and practiced. I thought about that adage that we've had pounded in our heads, you know, ever since I can remember. You know, oh, he's a natural born leader. And then you'll hear there are leaders and there are followers. Maybe all of that is a program that we've bought into.
Well, think about it. How many natural-born Olympians are there? Zero. They train every single day for years and years. How many natural-born entrepreneurs? None. They succeed, they fail, they succeed, they fail. Mm-hmm. How many natural-born...
Okay, sorry for that little blip there, but Greg, you were saying that there really are no natural-born athletes or Olympians. They have to really train hard to get to where they are, and that's really a good way of looking at it.
Oh, thanks. And it goes down to natural born what? I mean, the realities are, you know, it's one of these types of things when it comes like entrepreneurship. You know, people talk about that 85% of businesses fail in the first year. And the reason is that they're not naturally born entrepreneurs. They're winging it. They're figuring it out as they go. You know, it's like one of those type of things. If you look back and say an architect has an average of $75,000 worth of books and resource material that they can refer to. A doctor has over $200,000 worth of books and whatnot that he can refer to at any time. Someone walks in with a funky looking skin thing. He doesn't know it. He's got a reference he could go to. Mm-hmm. Well, the same thing with all professional things, attorneys, what have you. Well, someone else gets an entrepreneur and they have a Zig Ziglar CD rolling around the back seat of their car and they think they can start a business. Well, most people understand you got to invest in yourself. You got to invest in time, energy. You got to put the content in your head. But it's the people that do that have the best shot of success. It's not natural born. It's about applying the great wisdoms that you learn along life's journey.
Right. And I think we learn the most from our mistakes.
We do learn from our mistakes. And we also need to learn from our successes. I mean, a lot of people discount that. And I think it's time we have a little bit of, you know, patting on our backs, too, because How many times have we not made a mistake because we learned from it before and not given ourselves credit for it? We just said, oh, knew better than that. But we don't stop and go, gosh, that was great. I just saved myself a lot of time and energy. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, when you can share that same information with somebody else and pass it forward, that's where it really sits in. That's when you own it. It's like that old adage, when you give it away, that's when you know it's truly yours. The more that we can share our information, wisdom, knowledge, experience, the more that it becomes truly destined for ourselves.
Absolutely. You know, that reminds me of my teacher, Sun Bear. He used to say, taking in knowledge just for the sake of taking in knowledge is a waste of time. He said, knowledge only becomes wisdom when you share it with other people.
Amen. That's what I couldn't have said it better myself. Beautiful.
Yeah. And, you know, that's another thing that I really remembered for many years. One of the things I really like in the book, I mean, I, of course, love the whole book, but you talk about, and you give some examples, that what you do, and for me, what I do and who I am is almost, it's the same person. You talk about contributing to something larger than yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know that people understand that. Can you explain it?
Well, it seems to me that majority of the people that have true wealth, achievement, success in their life did it because they focused on something that was larger just than them as an individual. You know, when the founder of Make-A-Wish Foundation, Frank Shankiewicz, you know, he was a highway patrol officer in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And he started this nonprofit from a kitchen table and no money. And he had a vision to help kids make their wish come true. And since that was so big, he worked three jobs. He brought on the best people he get a hold of. He did everything he could because it wasn't about him.
Right.
The same thing goes for the next person. The same thing goes for the next person. Mm-hmm. And I realized that the most successful people did it for something bigger than just their own dreams and desires. I'll give you an example. The difference between people who come out on top and those who don't is their level of commitment. And it comes down to this. If I open up a brand new restaurant downtown San Diego because it's the hot trend, as soon as there's challenges, I might fold the tent and quit because, right, you know, it's just hard. If I take over the family Italian restaurant that's been around for 8 generations, when I have those same challenges, I'm going to find a way to stick it through and come out on top, mm-hmm, so I can pass it on to my kid and protect the legacy that's before me. I'm doing it for a bigger cause than just myself. And it's the people that do it for that bigger cause that truly become the champions.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I don't mean to brag, but when I read that, I stopped and I paused and I thought and I realized, you know, just doing what I do, doing this show is really for a bigger cause. It's to educate other people. You know, I could read your book and just read the book and walk away. I don't have to share that information with other people, but I've always been concerned with the next generations, you know, making it a better world for everybody.
Yeah, I hear it. And by the way, people listening to this, here's a little newsflash. This book is not a Greg Reed book. It's a Napoleon Hill Foundation book. And a lot of people don't know this, but Napoleon Hill never had a New York Times bestselling book because he wrote Think and Grow Rich 5 years before they started keeping track. Well,
right.
Think and Grow Rich Stickability, starting April 1st, will be our first New York Times bestseller push. So anyone and everyone listening to this, order a copy for yourself, your friends, people you love, and then ask them to tell other people about it. And let's make the Napoleon Hill Foundation's message and Think and Grow Rich bring it to the modern, you know, conversation.
Absolutely.
One of the biggest challenges of Think and Grow Rich was written so long ago. Well, these are modern stories of modern-day iconic figures that people can relate to, but it will put a attention or a spotlight, so to speak, on Napoleon Hill's great teachings and maybe inspire the next generation.
Absolutely. And just for people listening that aren't on my site, where I have live links to Greg's websites, so you can go to bookgreg.com and stick-ability.com, but there's live links here. And that's a very valid point you bring up, but I have to tell you this. I'm still shocked when I'm talking to different people, how many people never even read Think and Grow Rich. And I have to say this. I have a friend who has a brokerage on Wall Street, and he said to celebrate New Year's, every year on New Year's Day, he rereads Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah.
And he's made that promise to himself for like 30 years he's done it.
And you know what's interesting is a lot of the people that have not read Think and Grow Rich are also not those iconic figures. the people that I talk to and I interview and meet, they all have. And I find that to be an interesting common denominator. For example, I'm meeting next week with a gentleman who owns one of the, or not one of, he owns the largest retail jewelry line in all of the United States of America. The guy's a, you know, very successful guy. But more importantly, he reads Think and Grow Rich twice a year. And then when I talk to the founder of Remax Real Estate, same thing. And then when I talk to the founder of WordPress, same thing. And when I talked to the person who started the X Prize and changed space exploration, same thing. And I started realizing that these true champions, they all go to the same Bible of personal development. And what's really cool about it is it doesn't teach anything basically you don't know already, but it reminds you and reinforces the information that you were taught from your parents and your grandparents. And I got to tell you, it's one of the greatest books of inspiration of all time.
Absolutely. But your books, you know, 3 Feet from Gold, which you co-authored with Sharon Lecter, and Think and Grow Rich, Stickability, The Power of Perseverance, I was going to say perseverance, brings it into the modern language. It's almost like, you know, an updated version of the Bible. And I loved, by the way, Outwitting the Devil, which Sharon released a few years ago through the Napoleon Hill Foundation. You know, and look how long it took for that book to get published.
Yeah, 75 years, I believe, is how much it was sitting behind. So moving on, I got to tell you, with the Stickability, one of the greatest interviews I did is I saw a guy on 60 Minutes named Marty Cooper, and I wanted to interview him. 2 days later, I'm in his office, and I said, what does Stickability mean to you? Right. And he said, Stickability has to be parallel with another word called flexibility. And by the way, Marty Cooper invented a cellular phone. Where would your life be without one of these suckers, right? I mean, your whole life is evolved around cellular phones. And he's, I said, what do you mean? He says, well, flexibility is the key to all personal achievement. You have to be willing to adapt and adjust or you'll end up being stuck. Mm-hmm. And he told a story about a spider monkey. He said, a spider monkey in the rainforest is the most quick, nimble creature. And they couldn't harpoon it, spear it, catch it. It was just too wiry. One hunter figured it out. He took a heavy log and drilled a tiny hole inside and dropped it at the base of the jungle. The monkey would smell a nut that he'd drop in that little hole and come down the treetops and reach his hand inside. He'd grab a hold of that nut and his fist would become so big he couldn't pull it back out of that little hole and become anchored to the log.
Right.
The hunter comes by an hour later, hits him over the head and captures the monkey. Well, all he's got to do is let go and live to fight another day, but he thinks that nut is saving him. And the moral is, are you holding on to your own nut in life? But it's in the form of a bad relationship or fear or a house or a car. And sometimes we have to have the courage and fortitude to simply let go so we can live to fight another day.
Absolutely. Well, another thing you talk about in the book, and it is very important to just walk away from negative people. Or to me, I call it, you know, if people don't support who I am, I can't have them in my space.
Well, there you go. And, you know, one of the president of Napoleon Hill Foundation, Jim Olson, said to me, he says, you should not walk away from people with, you know, negative attitudes. You should run from them. And I always thought that was interesting because the whole concept is, you know, what does it tell you and your psyche and to your universe and to your God and to other people around you if you're willing to sit and tolerate negative stuff? And to me, I just don't tolerate it in my life at all. And I also realize that the most successful people don't let it infiltrate their arena as well.
Mm-hmm. And I want you to know, your book reminded me to write down what I desire, to actually write it down on paper. How important is that?
Well, I believe it's extraordinarily important. You know, I always list my goals or by my office desk at all times, and I keep them in front of my face, and I believe it's a constant reminder for ourselves. It's kind of like one of those things. It's impossible to hit a target that you don't see, and you can never hit a goal without having one. So by giving yourself a goal, at least it gives you something to shoot for.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's another good way of putting it, because it does keep it in front of your face. Because, you know, I hear a lot of people, oh, I wish, or I hope this happens. What do you think about wishing and hoping?
Well, I don't believe that wishing and hoping is a strategy. I believe it's just wishing and hoping. You know, it's like the law of attraction. People think you think it and naturally comes to be. And in reality, is you got to think it, you got to feel it, but you got to get off your backside and you got to take action. Mm-hmm. It's the action behind the attraction that makes our dreams come true.
Absolutely. And I think that that was such a disservice to people when people came out with, you know, if you just think it, it's just going to magically appear. And yet, you know, and I'm trying to remember the name of that movie that became so famous a couple of years ago. I think it was called The Secret. And when I watched it like everybody else, I even interviewed one of the producers. But, you know, looking at it, it just seemed like pie in the sky. And I was like, but where's the call to action? You know, people sit back, and if you're going to just wait for something to happen, I'm sure you've seen the bumper stickers, shit happens. But my teacher used to say, sometimes even that doesn't happen on its own.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like I said, everyone's got their different perception. If that helps you to think that, you know, you think it and it naturally comes to be, at least it's a positive thought. However, I've never met anyone that naturally had that fall into their lap. You got to think it, you got to feel it, but ultimately you got to take the necessary actions. That's what I found.
I have to agree with that. But you, I got to tell you, you are such an optimist. It's kind of odd to meet somebody as optimistic as you are, Greg. And I know your story, so I know you certainly weren't born with a silver spoon in your mouth or had it easy. You really worked for what you have. You know, you really put some action in it and a whole lot of guts.
Well, I think it's just like we were talking about earlier, is I truly do not feel very special in any way whatsoever. Barely graduated high school. I'm just a regular guy. But the realities are, I actually believe that if I think something, I believe that I can go take action towards it, I can actually achieve it. So right now, for example, we were talking about Frank, the founder of Make-A-Wish. I just actually got the rights to his life story, and I'm making my first feature major Hollywood film right now called Wishman, and it's the actual true story, the founding of the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And, you know, I don't have the answers, but I surround myself with people that do. When I wanted to be a best-selling author, I went to Barnes & Noble. I bought every best-selling book. I called those authors up, and I asked them to teach me. They did. Here we are 50 books later in 35 countries. When I wanted to be a public speaker, I went to Zig Ziglar, Brian Tracy, Dennis Whately, Charlie Truman. I went to the top people and asked them to teach me, and here we are. Now that I'm getting in the motion pictures, you know, I hired the gal to do my line producer who did Contact with Jodie Foster and Kundan with Martin Scorsese. I've got my counselor, which is, you know, Gary Goldstein, who produced Pretty Woman and Under Siege and Mothman Prophecies. And I surround myself with people who are already doing what I want to do. And then I follow the successful actions of those people and just duplicate it myself. Is that it? That's it.
Well, that's a great way to do it. Greg, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, of course, I want to talk about words, because your book makes it very clear that words matter. So stay with us, Greg, and I'll be right back. Hear all the negatives coming out.
Wow, I bet they love you for that.
Well, you know, look, you know, English was a big deal in my family. We even call my older sister the English teacher because we are afraid to even send her a note because we're going to get it grammatically corrected when she returns her answer.
It's interesting because from the time I wrote that book to what I'm working on now, I'm doing a new book. It's called Think and Grow Rich, Offspring of Thought, How Ideas Become Realities. And I interviewed the founder of TED Talks, and we were talking about words. And here's one of the discoveries that we made, is that the English dictionary in 1945 and before is completely different than the ones from 1946 and after. Mm. If you don't believe me, get a copy of both, and it will absolutely blow your mind. And a lot of people feel that those a lot of the words were changed for control. And at the end of the day, when you start hearing words that we're using right now, I'm even using incorrectly, or different than the original definition. For example, if you look up the first English dictionary, was in 1762, I believe. And before then, dictionaries were only owned by royalty or lawyers or people that would have access. The layman, regular people, never had one. When they published the first one in the 1760s, the words that were used all the way till 1945 are different than today. I'll give you an example. If you use the word success, well, we think that means personal achievement. But by definition, that word means completion. It means you're done.
Right.
The original way that the word was used was completion. And when you look up the word nice, that's the way it was supposed to be. That word means weak. So when you hear someone saying, no more Mr. Nice Guy, means no more Mr. Weak Guy. Or that guy's such a nice person, meaning usually that they were such a weak person. And you start seeing that these words still ring true, but we're using them incorrectly, but we're really getting that same answer. So people that are striving for success just means you're striving to end. Or if you're looking for, anyway, when you go look up these words, it'll absolutely blow your mind. You know, like the word need means that you're in lacking of. And so the whole thing is that we want to make sure that we're saying the right words in the right order.
Right. Well, you know, I try to tell people that when they use the word need and want, they're only going to draw more need and want. And that then maybe they want to use the word desire and require instead.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's interesting.
It's ironic that you say that. If you look up the words, exactly what you just said is the exact correct way of using those words.
Wow. Well, okay. You know, look, I'm a crossword puzzle freak, and all my friends make fun of me for that. But I had a conversation just the other night on just this topic because I was doing a crossword, and they asked, the clue was, what do you call a shopper? And the answer was browser. And I thought about that, and I said, today the word browser has an entirely different meaning than just when I was, you know, 10, 20 years younger, because a browser was somebody window shopping. We're going browsing, you know. Now it's all about, you know, the internet. So it is kind of interesting.
It is absolutely true how words have changed. And now, for example, if you look up the original dictionary, the word battery, well, the original word in the 16, you know, in those, the era was, it was to actually battery attack, hurt, injure another person. Well, today, battery might be the storage of, you know, energy, because it's completely different today than it was back then. There was no battery. So it's really interesting to see how words have adapted and adjusted, and the words that we use moving forward to actually explain what it is that we have in our hands. Anyway, so moving forward, yeah, there's a lot of words of use, and we keep using the words try, which means fail. We use all these amazing different concepts. We mean the best of intention, but sometimes what we're throwing out to the laws of the universe is the actual opposite of what it is that we're attempting to do.
I agree 100%. Now, of course, I've read the books. A lot of my questions are loaded, but I like your explanations, of course. The difference, or is there a difference, and if so, what's the difference between stickability and stubbornness?
Well, you know, it goes down to something I believe called the knowing. And not, like you said before, the hope, belief, wish, it's the knowing. And it's the people that succeed are the people that know internally. And you can't explain it. There's no, you know, quantifiable thing, which is when you know you're on to something great, and you don't let other people or yourself talk you out of that dream, compared to hoping or wishing that this is the answer, and you keep fighting and pushing through, and usually that does not come through. If you go back and look at everything you knew in life, the stuff that you knew was the right decision, yet was challenging, you find a way through. It's the things that you hoped would work out, usually didn't. And so that's the big difference between it. So stubbornness to me is persevering in something that you know you should probably let go.
Now, you talk about something in the book. It's the first time I've seen the words together. So I absolutely made myself a note. Ask him what he really means by this. Relaxed intensity.
Well, relaxed intensity is an amazing little definition, I believe. And all great leaders possess something called relaxed intensity. That means that the captain on a ship, when the boat is sinking, cannot freak out and go into hysteria. They have to have relaxed intensity, meaning they have to be calm and have composure, but they have to be intense to get the people off the boat. And it seems to me that the people that can have this relaxed intensity are the people that other folks will tend to follow. So, for example, you know, I give an example in there of Pem Sherpa, that him and his wife were the only couple in history to actually get married on the top of Mount Everest. But coming down, the wife was not used to being that high up, and she had snow blindness and all the challenges and tribulations they had on that quest. but he stayed cool under pressure and kept everyone else cool. Now, he was freaking out a little on the inside, but he had to keep composure and make sure everyone else stayed relaxed and calm and together so that everyone got down that mountain safely. And I realized that whether you're a football captain or a quarterback and there's only 6 seconds left and you got the ball, you have to have intensity what you're doing, but you have to stay composed. If you don't, that's when you throw in an interception. Mm-hmm. And the realities are all the way down in life, whether you're a stockbroker, a business person, a housewife, whatever, relaxed intensity is the key. You know, God forbid you're a homemaker and your child walks in and they've got a broken arm.
Right.
And there, majority of us, we slip into this almost cool, calm composure that we can't explain so that we can deal with the situation that we rush into the hospital. But we have to be cool. If we start freaking out, then boy, God forbid for that poor
kid. Right. You make a bad situation worse. You know, I've always had this great gift of being in relaxed intensity when I had to deal with some issue like that with my kids or my grandchildren. But I have to tell you, Greg, once it's over, my body falls apart. I'll, like, get the chills, I get the shakes, but I've already taken care of the problem. It's almost like I put off the stress until it's over.
Well, there you go. And people deal with it in different ways. Mm-hmm. But the realities are you possess that relaxed intensity. And it's the people that can harness that and stay in the relaxed intensity at the most, you know, vulnerable moments are the true champions. And that's one of the things that I've been working on mastering myself.
Right. Well, with a 2-year-old, you better master it and quick. You talk about the importance, and I don't think it's just about business or in your business or business venture, but the importance of getting along with other people. And that, you know, no man is an island. And I think a lot of times when people create or want to do something, they're embarrassed or ashamed or I don't know what the feeling is to ask other people to help.
Yeah, the first chapter is an interview taken from Napoleon Hill from the 1940s. And in this, everyone talks about Napoleon Hill talking about success principles and all this personal achievement. Well, he also came up with the 3 causes of failure. He says, look, you can read 1 billion books or go to seminars and learn how to be successful, but if you do these 3 things, I guarantee you'll fail. And one of them was the inability to get along with other people. Mm-hmm. Fact is, if you can't get along with other people, you cannot get them on your message and behind you, then you can never be a great leader. The next one was procrastination, putting off tomorrow what you should be doing today. Mm-hmm. And then the 3rd one, you got to read the book to find out because it's the most important.
right. Not that we want to do a shameless promotion, but first of all, it's a very easy read. That I have to tell you, which is a welcome relief to me from all the heavy duty books that people, you know, send me to try to get through. Some of them I feel like
that's because I'm not that smart. And what's really cool about it is if you just write it the way that you'd want to read it, that's the way that I do our books. I go, look, how would I want to read this book? And that's how we write it. You know, no big words are ever harmed. And, you know, we use big font, small letters, small words. And by doing that, it's really simple, and it can also be digestible, understood by the masses. And here's a big thing most people don't think about. It's also easily translated in all the different foreign countries.
Right. That's a big plus. Are there any tips to overcoming fears? You know, you really do list, I believe it was on page 88, a list of very common fears. You know, it's not like we all have different fears. I think we all have very similar fears. One of them, the fear of poverty, the fear of criticism, the fear of ill health, loss of love, the fear of old age, the fear of death. How can people overcome fear, which you already said, basically, I like to say it's an anagram for forever experiencing an alternate reality. How can you overcome these fears? Does it take really believing in yourself?
Well, you know, that's the $64,000 question, and I will never answer that for other people because I think it's different for each person, but I will share with you what I do, and I think that's the easiest way.
Right.
I live, and I'm right here along the ocean. Right now, I'm in literally half a block from the surf, and one of the things that growing up on the ocean is surfers do something. When they're on their surfboard and they're paddling out, they have to get past all the big breakers, all the big waves. Well, when a big wave comes in, you're on your surfboard. If you grab a hold of that surfboard and you kind of tuck in, that wave's going to crash over you, and it's literally going to break you and your board in half, push you to the bottom, drown you. What surfers do is something called a duck dive. They point the tip of the board in the belly of that wave, and they go underneath it, and they pop up the other side. It's called a duck dive. And that's what I do myself. When the fear comes at me, I just look at it dead in the eye, and I go into it. I don't hide from it. I don't duck it. I don't curl. I go right into it because I realize that usually fear is all those acronyms, false evidence, appearing real, and every other corny explanation we want to do. But the realities are it's fear that we made up our own self. And the moment that we attack it and go towards it, we realize that fear goes away. Fear's only enemy is action. So by taking action, it eliminates the fear.
I like that. That's very well put. And I remember living on the beach and watching surfers do that exact same thing. I used to say, wow, are these people crazy? Because that wouldn't be something I'd find myself doing. What about being fully present? What I find is a lot of people are still, you know, always concerned with what happened yesterday, what's going to happen tomorrow, and they don't stay fully present to their life right now at the moment. In other words, you know, it's that thought of when somebody's in a conversation, you know, and I'm sure you've seen the posts on Facebook and whatnot, you know, instead of listening, people are wondering how they're going to respond to what the person is saying to them because they're not being fully present. How detrimental is that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of got mixed emotions on this topic. You know, I think there goes down a little bit of alchemy, I guess, so to speak, because part of it is, like, we have to be holding on to our past a little bit so that we can learn from those things. Mm-hmm. We have to be looking at the future, or we better hope it never comes. And then we have to embrace the opportunity at hand that we are right now. So I believe it's kind of a three-pronged approach, because people that just live in the present and forget about the past better hope it never repeats itself. Mm-hmm. And the people that aren't thinking about the future better hope it never comes. So for me, I think it's a little combination for everything. Again, that's just my personal, you know, my personal belief system. Mm-hmm. However, the people that I've interviewed and the people that I've met that have made the biggest impact in the world, they also embrace that same philosophy. So yeah, you want to live in the moment and embrace it, but you also want to take a little bit of our knowledge and experience and apply it towards what's coming up around the bend.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the way I meant that question, maybe, and I agree with what you said, because I do that too. But I think the way I meant the question is sometimes people want to start a business, but they don't really concentrate on it. They're always busy thinking about this, that, and the other thing and never fully present to their goal and then wonder why it doesn't happen. So maybe the attention is the word I'm thinking of.
Yeah, maybe it's focus and maybe it's something else. And if you ask me the question in a concise way, I think I could answer it better, but I would say that, yes, focus is imperative. I mean, and I believe also that multitasking in society is kind of challenging because, you know, we can only do so many things. You open up a computer and you put it onto, you know, your Facebook and then your emails and you have all these different screens open, your computer is going to run slow. It cannot run at the optimum time. But the moment that we just got one thing and we're focusing on it, we can dial it in as quick as a whip. So I think that's the same thing as life and business. On the same note, you know, I am focusing personally on my personal relationships and my kid and my work and my pleasure and my play and, you know, have a little bit of that balance. But the reason we can do that is I kind of focus on what I'm doing at that moment. Like right now, I'm talking to you on this show.
Right.
That's it. I'm not doing emails. I'm not doing anything. I'm just having this conversation. The second I get off, then I'm going to go do the next thing. But I do realize that within the 24 hours, I'll be doing 15 or 16 of these type of projects.
Right. Your book says that poverty is a state of mind. And when I read that and I said, if I say that on the show, I'm sure a lot of people are going to argue that they didn't draw poverty to themselves. It's the economy. It's this and that. Do you really believe that poverty is a state of mind?
Absolutely. And again, I'm going to say the first opening line. We are exactly where we choose to be. It was our actions, our thoughts, backed by our actions that gave us the results where we are today. Good, bad, indifferent, period. So there, you know, realities are, I know a lot of people that made a boatload of money and then got hit in the, you know, economic challenge of the downfall in real estate. Mm-hmm. But they're the ones that invested every single thing they had in the real estate, including me. So I'm a victim of this thing. But I didn't complain and call other people's fault why that happened. I'm the one who did it. It's the same thing, the thing where people have to take accountability and responsibility for where they are. You know, if you're not in a good relationship, well, you're the one that picked that relationship. If you don't like your job, too bad, suck it up. You're the one who, you know, opened up the help wanted ad, lied on the application, went down, kissed butt to get the job. Do something about it. Mm-hmm. And we're exactly where we choose to be. And at any time, at any moment, we can change our reality. So, you know, that's just not only my belief, that's what I know to be true. And, you know, we become the story that we tell ourselves. I'll give you a quick example. When I did 3 Feet from Gold, when I started out, I was a very successful guy. I mean, very, very successful. And what happened is I bought a furniture store, a bar, a restaurant, self-storage facility, and a multi-million-dollar house. And the economic challenge came in 2007-08, and everything went in the toilet, and I lost everything. Mm-hmm. At that time, Napoleon Hill Foundation asked me to do 3 Feet from Gold. And I thought to myself, well, I can go get another job or start another business, or I can go on this tour for 3 years and meet all these amazing people. And that's what I chose. But for 3 years, I had nothing. I mean, I hawked my Rolex watch. I sold all my stuff. I went all in. And after that book came out and became a success, I traveled the world, and I told everyone my story. And I became my story, talking about what I did not have. And guess what? I had nothing. The moment I sat down with Les Brown, I sat to him and I says, hey, you know, I used to be a rich guy and I have nothing now. Why? And he says, you became the story you're telling. And it hit me right there like a ton of bricks. Hmm. He says, you are responsible for your success and failure. Go get your stuff back. I walked out of that office, and I'll never forget. He said, fill your own cup so full that you can feed the world with what flows over. I started taking accountability of everything around me. I started taking inventory of what I had, the good, the bad, the ugly. Got rid of the ugly. Got rid of the bad. I bought more good. 7 months later, Ocean View, panoramic house, 3 cars, got every single thing you could possibly imagine back in 7 months. And the difference was that I stopped buying into the story I was telling myself.
Hmm. Well, that's great, and that's very inspirational. Well, Greg, I want to thank you so much for joining me again today. It's always great talking with you.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Well, we'll talk again when you get your new book out.
Hey, you keep smiling. Thanks for having me on.
I will. Take care, Greg. Bye. Greg Reed. Check him out at the links here on site. Let me give that to you again. BookGreg.com, stick-ability.com. And I know some of these things are a little hard to get, you know, but maybe we all have our own story. And maybe it's time to change the happy ending to our story. Anyway, tomorrow, Blood and Guts with myself and Jack Blood. Thank you so much for supporting the show, and I will see you guys then.